Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC, and now a Bloomberg Public Health Scorecard. You know the mayor feels passionately about public health issues, from smoking to sugary drinks and trans fat consumption to gun violence. He has tended to go hard after the most common causes of early death, injury, and disease. In the news right now, of course, are his gun control and stop and frisk policies, and yesterday's public hearing on the proposal to ban sales of sugary drinks over 16 ounces in many restaurants and movie theaters. It brought testimony from both sides.
I'm here to speak in support of this policy because we believe that as we go to funeral homes and hospitals and visit people who have suffered from obesity and diabetes, that this is a major issue in our communities and it needs to be redressed.
This short-sighted measure will shut down production of movie theaters, pizza places, restaurants, coffee shops, even ice cream parlors will be affected by this absolutely ridiculous ban.
That was Queens City Council member Dan Halloran via CBS. Halloran, by the way, running for Congress against Grace Meng. He's the Republican candidate in that Queens district. And before that, we heard Reverend Brian Carter, thanks to CNN for that clip, from the Brooklyn Ecumenical Advisory Group. Joining us now, Bloomberg watcher Joyce Pernick, WNYC contributor, former New York Times Metro editor, author of the book Mike Bloomberg, Money, Power, Politics. Let's see if the mayor is winning these public health battles. Hi, Joyce.
Good morning.
First, a victory to record, and this has to do with cancer rates. The American Cancer Society just compared cancer rates in New York, upstate and downstate, and saw a big difference in lung cancer rates over time, which they attribute to the city's smoking ban. I guess that's a metric the mayor can rightly be proud of.
I would think so. And, of course, you never know cause and effect, but it's pretty clear, to me at least, that there is a connection. And I think it's largely, and this has oddly been overlooked by a lot of analysts, but I think it's largely price. It's the cost. If you talk to anybody in the field, they will tell you, professors, et cetera, who study this stuff, they will tell you that as the price of a pack of cigarettes goes up, the usage goes down. And in New York City, compared to New York State, it's more costly because we add $1.50 a pack in taxes.
And that has gotten even more expensive under Bloomberg?
Yes. It became more expensive. It's a city initiative. Now, the state tax is quite high. The last I looked, it was about $4.35. New York City adds $1.50, and that's a Bloomberg initiative, absolutely. So along with that and the ban and the public service announcements, et cetera, mm-hmm. you put that all together, putting the price way ahead of everything else, and you've got what you've got, which is
now,
the reduction.
I wonder, and I don't think the figures from the American Cancer Society tell us this, but I wonder if workers in bars and restaurants, people in that industry, are showing the biggest declines, because that was one of the main reasons that the mayor wanted the smoking ban. It wasn't so much for the convenience of patrons who could go to another restaurant. It was for the occupational health and safety of the people who have to stay there 8 hours or whatever a day.
Yeah, it had a lot to do with it, just as earlier bans on airplanes because of flight attendants who felt that they were being asphyxiated. This goes way back in New York City. It didn't start with Bloomberg. It actually started with Ed Koch, who began the ban, and then Bloomberg piggybacked on it and strengthened it. I think it's had quite an impact. And again, I personally would put the emphasis on price. It's a big issue for people. If they have to pay $11.50 or whatever it is today, it's close to that, if not a little bit higher, in New York City for a pack of cigarettes. That's a lot of money.
So
young people in particular, they don't want to have to spend that, so they don't.
Absolutely. So there's one public health victory for our public health mayor. And last week, there was a study released that showed that New Yorkers are eating fewer trans fats. The health department tracked purchases at fast food restaurants before and after the ban, and they also found a drop of 21 calories per purchase. Now, that's not many calories,
no.
But it's not nothing.
No, it's cumulative. I mean, if you can't get something made with trans fats, you'll get something that's made without trans fats. And I also think the labeling has had an impact. Look, as somebody who went on her first diet in third grade, I always look at calories and consider calories. And I remember once I was in a Starbucks not too long ago, and I wanted to get a muffin for breakfast. And then I looked at the calorie content, and that's, again, the Bloomberg Initiative. The calories are something like, I can't remember, I mean, 500, 600 calories, something like that. Don't hold me to it, Starbucks, but it was up there for one muffin. And I said, yeah, I think I'll pass.
Right.
So I can't be the only one, right?
Yeah, I that's something that I don't think has been well measured yet. Now that the calorie counts on all these common items are right there posted on the wall in all these chains, is it actually changing people's behavior and then actually changing people's weight? I don't think the stats are in from that yet, but at least this is one indication, a drop of 21 calories per purchase, which leads us to the continuing fight against obesity and type 2 diabetes and the proposed large sugary soda ban. There was, as you know, a public hearing yesterday held by the Board of Health, but it wasn't really the public that weighed in, right? It was interested parties, let's say.
Shock, shock. It wasn't really the public. There was hardly anybody there who represented the general public. It was basically the industry, the soda industry, the movie theaters, et cetera, who are complaining that business will be hurt if this ban goes into effect, which is exactly what they complained about. All of the other health initiatives, banning cigarettes in restaurants and so on, and it never did hurt business, so I suspect it won't here. And on the other side, we had scientists and members of the administration, public health experts, who are claiming that it would help people learn how to eat better and improve their health.
And representing the industry were not just people who work explicitly in the industry, but any number of elected officials. And I know they make a lot of campaign contributions. I heard Marty Markowitz saying, oh, my weight is my own problem. Here is City Councilman Oliver Capel from the Bronx wondering where this ends, courtesy of Wins Radio.
The size of candy bars and pizza slices, or bars from serving any customer more than two drinks, all under the pretense of protecting health.
And here's New York City Health Commissioner, Bloomberg appointee, Thomas Farley, speaking to reporters on that side.
Now, if a virus were killing 5,800 New Yorkers this year, people would be clamoring for strong government action to stop it.
So going back to that Capel clip, Joyce, and my guest, Bloomberg watcher Joyce Pernick, WNYC contributor, Capel said the pretense of protecting public health. Where would it end? We'd be regulating the size of candy bars and pizza slices, or serving any customer more than two drinks in bars, all under the pretense of protecting public health. Like it's a pretense to really do something else.
Yeah, I didn't quite get it. I don't quite understand his argument, frankly, and I don't even understand what all the shouting is about on this one, because on the soda ban, you know, all anybody has to do is buy two, right? they want the number of ounces that would be banned and will be banned.
Twice the money.
Because the mayor controls the Board of Health, so that's what's going to happen. The Board of Health is going to approve.
Do you think that's so certain? I know this is what we've been hearing all along, that this is a done deal because the mayor found a way to get around the city council and public outrage to the extent that there is about this, because he does appoint the members of the Board of Health, which would be the only body that has to approve it. However, my sense is that the public is generally against this. So will the public, the Board of Health, fly in the face of that?
Well, you know, as you may remember, I don't like to predict, but in this case, every single member of the Board of Health is appointed by the mayor. So let's just say I would be surprised if the board did not approve this, but I also would be surprised if there wouldn't be a cascade of litigation that would slow things down. So I don't think this is going to take place immediately. But again, this isn't an outright ban on soda. It's just saying, you know, you can't have a big one. You can have two little ones or two medium-sized ones. So the outrage over this really, I have to say, eludes me. And I think basically what the Bloomberg people, the mayor and his health commissioner, are trying to do in this case is educate the public about what's in those big soda-sized portions. I don't think people really understand, and maybe a few more of them will. But I also think, Brian, that this will not go into effect immediately because of litigation.
So, listeners, has Mayor Bloomberg made the city healthier? Has the public health mayor improved public health? It seems like he has, at least on a couple of the scores that we've been talking about so far. 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692. And I printed out this morning, and I have in front of me, the leading causes of death. This is a cherry thing to be researching at 8 o'clock in the morning. The leading causes of death in New York City over the last decade, according to the New York State Health Department. And it really is interesting to see that the cancer rate is what we said measurably has gone down. Lung cancer, yes. But the overall cancer rate, which is how this is broken down, 172 people died out of every 100,000 people in the city back in 2001, 172. Only 144 people per 100,000 died of cancer in 2009, the last year measured. So that's, you know, somewhat of a measurable drop.
But can I interrupt you for a second?
Sure.
I mean, I think you got to be really careful. And I think Bloomberg, you know, who's very supportive of public health and has been at Johns Hopkins and for many years would be the first to say this, that cause and effect is very difficult when it comes to diseases, right? I mean, you've got to justify for population and education and all kinds of factors. So I just wanted to throw that. Mm-hmm. We can exercise common sense here and say there is a correlation between policy and death rates and disease, et cetera, but I really do want to say,
right,
I think you've got to be careful.
Absolutely, you have to be careful. But we also can look at numbers in terms of pure change, and we've seen the cancer rate going down. The top killers in New York, listeners, in case you never thought about this, heart disease kills more people than anything else.
Mm-hmm.
Cancer is second. This is generally the way it is in the United States. Heart disease,
right,
one, cancer, two. Then pneumonia and influenza is third. Now, it's interesting to me to look at the progression over these last 10 years of diabetes from sixth place to fourth place.
Yeah.
So it used to be that stroke and AIDS killed more people in New York City than diabetes as of a decade ago. Now diabetes is fourth, ahead of stroke and AIDS. And again, it's not proof, but it's an indication that as more and more things get supersized and as people exercise less and those various trends, that the type 2 diabetes rate and therefore the death from type 2 diabetes is in fact going up. And that's a significant public health question when you see something change that dramatically.
No, there's no question about it. And it's also a huge cost to the public, right? In terms of providing healthcare and emergency rooms and so on, and this is, you know, to get unemotional about it and just talk dollars and cents, it's also a huge cost to the public and to the taxpayer, which I suspect has something to do with the emphasis on the sugary drinks.
You know, I asked for calls from people who want to talk about Bloomberg as a public health mayor. Just about every call is on this sugary drinks limitation, pro or con. So let's hear from a few people, but I don't want to get mired in it because I think we've had the arguments pro and con on this show so many times already. But Joe in Greenpoint, you're on the air. Hi, Joe.
Hi, Brian. How are you?
Okay.
Generally, I agree with, you know, having New Yorkers eat healthier, and I myself don't drink a lot of soda. But when I take my family out to the movies, we buy the big, large combo, which is the huge soda and the huge popcorn. That feeds four of us. So we get away with spending only like $15 on snacks. If we have to buy individual sodas for everybody now, it's going to cost us double or triple that.
Huh.
I don't think I'm going to be going to the movies much anymore.
Do you get four straws, or do you just share each other's germs?
The straws are out on the counter for free, so we just grab four straws. And
Joe, thank you very much. So there's how it will impact one person. And Joyce, you know, it's going to be hard to enforce if they do it Because in cases like the movie, like I was just at the movies the other day, mm-hmm. Queen of Versailles, highly recommended. And I noticed that they had, like a lot of fast food restaurants do, a fountain where you serve yourself. So basically what you're buying is a cup size.
Right.
And so but some of the drinks at the fountain are okay, would be okay under this limitation because diet sodas are not included, diet drinks in general. You can buy a big diet drink if this goes through. You can't buy a big sugary drink. And so then what are they going to do? Are they going to sell you the 32-ounce cup, but a cop is going to be standing there making sure you only put diet soda into it? Obviously not. Obviously not. But how are they going to do it? Maybe they will only sell the small cups and really make Joe and his family buy multiple cups. I don't know.
I don't know either. How about the water fountain, Joe? How about the water fountain?
Cassius in Brooklyn, you're on WNYC. Hi, Cassius.
Hey, Brian. Thank you. I know you want me to speak more specifically about him being the health.
You can say whatever
mayor.
You want.
Yeah, I think he's been really great in being a leader. In the whole anti-smoking in the bars, and you know, it's been great to have that eliminated from bars. I've been living here long enough. I remember how disgusting it would be to leave bars, you know, stinking of cigarette smoke, and to think about how awful that was for my health and everyone's health. And I'm totally in favor of, you know, also his statements about gun control recently. Like he's willing to be a real leader where there's a total vacuum of leadership, and I think eventually sodas should be completely outlawed, really. And people shouldn't be upset now because they'll still be able to buy 16-ounce sodas for a while.
Altogether, you would outlaw. And if you go to sodas, then you have to go to the so-called sports drinks that have a lot of sugar and, you know, the sugary coffees at Starbucks and all of that stuff?
Well, the sodas are a special pernicious problem because it's not just the sugar, it's not just the sweetness of them. The phosphorus, the high phosphorus amounts that's in them is really bad for our bones. It weakens human bones. So it's not just simply the sweetness factor of them.
Right. It's a larger conversation about soda that maybe we could have someday. But Joyce, he did mention the mayor's leadership on gun violence. And as we start to run out of time here, he's, of course, been way out front in calling for gun restrictions following the Aurora shootings and previously. But he's not really made any progress on the national agenda, has he? So if we're doing a public health scorecard, I don't know. On the other hand, shootings are down in the years of the Bloomberg administration generally. So maybe he gets points on the scorecard for that.
I think there are a lot of factors that contribute to that, including, and we could talk about this today or another time, stop and frisk, which is highly controversial. But I think, to me, the most interesting aspect of Bloomberg's leadership or attempted leadership on gun control is that he's one of the few prominent elected officials in this country who is in a position to say what he's saying. And I think that's an extraordinary commentary on our political society because, look, he's from a blue, blue, blue city in a blue state. He's a lame duck. He's a multi-billionaire who can write his own ticket to wherever he wants to go. So he he's never probably, I don't know what it could be for, so he is probably never going to run for office again. So he's free,
right?
He can say whatever he wants.
And
the presidential candidates feel, as he himself has said, that they risk too much by saying anything, so they simply dodge the issue. And I think, to me, that's a very sobering commentary on our politics.
Indeed.
That people who are in very prominent positions and running for prominent positions, unless they have nothing to lose, like Mike Bloomberg, just keep their mouth shut. What a terrible commentary.
This is politically incorrect, but maybe there's a consistency between the mayor's fight against the NRA, popular among progressives, and his aggressive stop and frisk policies, unpopular among progressives. Maybe he's just trying from both directions to reduce the number of shootings, and he is willing to test the limits of both the Second and Fourth Amendments to do it.
No, I don't think that's politically incorrect at all. I think it's factual. I didn't mean to suggest that Bloomberg doesn't believe in what he's saying. He is very outspoken on a lot of issues that are not popular. And but I do think on a national issue like gun control, right, where it comes from a city and state where gun control is accepted as important and necessary, it helps. Right, that he comes from a place where he can afford to say what he's saying. I think it helps. That doesn't mean that he doesn't also do things that upset some members of the public, like stop and frisk.
Joyce Pernick, Bloomberg Watcher, WNYC contributor, former New York Times Metro editor, author of the book Mike Bloomberg, Money, Power, Politics. Thank you so much.
My pleasure.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Coming up next, liberal linguists George Lakoff and Elizabeth Whaling on their new book, How to Talk Democratic. Stay with us.